Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.
Welcome back to Hot Takes and Deep Dives. And Jerry Manthe is one of the most controversial figures to ever come out of Survivor, with a career on the show spanning 20 years. She was dubbed, quote, the Black Widow way back in season 2, the Australian Outback, and later had one of the greatest redemption arcs, returning for both All Stars and Heroes versus Villains. What else can I say? Hi, Jerry Manthe.
Hi. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. Yeah, I think it's your excitement that has fueled my excitement just to like dish on all the things.
You know, right before I hit record, Jerry was just saying how much she also loves Gina Gershon. And you were saying how much you loved her in a day. And I feel similarly toward you. Forever. Yeah. Girl, I have loved you forever.
That's crazy.
How have you been? Like, where are you living now? We'll start macro and then we'll get micro.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, I live in Napa Valley now. I fled from LA. It's 5 years ago now. And I live in the middle of a vineyard in a barn. It's like the coolest place I've ever lived, honestly. And every day I open up my windows and I just stand there and go, oh my gosh, I can't believe I live here. Like, I feel so lucky where I'm at. I do miss, you know, the hustle and bustle of LA and being able to order Thai food at 3 a.m. But, you know, we have lots of good wine here, so I'm fine.
And are you a chef?
I'm right now working as a private chef in San Francisco. It's just a crazy story how I got that job to begin with. But I've been chefing since 2004 when my first chef job was actually for Will and Jada Smith.
Whoa. Yeah. Wait, how did you get that job?
I had a roommate at the time. I had just bought a new house and I was like, I'm going to get a roommate. Something I never do. And she was the private chef for Will and Jada, and she needed an assistant. And when they went to Aspen for Christmas, I got to go to Aspen with them and cook for them. And it was amazing. Like, that was my first shot at being a private chef. I was like, you can make money doing this. But at that point, I hadn't even gone to culinary school and they were calling me a chef. So I was like, I don't really feel comfortable with that label until I've properly studied. So I put myself through culinary school, and it's always been something that I do along with all the other things that I do. I do a lot of things.
Well, tell me, what else do you do? I mean, we're going to spend a lot of time on Survivor, but like up top, like what else do you do?
I was also a wine tour guide for about 2 years. And that was one of my favorite jobs ever. Like, every day I got recognized. I'm driving the bus, taking people to all these different wineries, and people are like, oh my gosh, wait, I know where I know you from. You're Jerry from Survivor. And it either went one of two ways. Like, the rest of the day, I was like, okay, you guys, we're here to talk about wine.
Uh-huh. Are they just like pumping you with Survivor questions while you're supposed to be teaching them about wine?
All day long. Yeah. And then it was the rare occasion when people wouldn't recognize me. And then I would have a fun time with that too, because it's like my little secret.
Okay. Hypothetically, if I was in wine country and you showed up, I would like drop the fuck dead, as would many of my friends. That would be utterly absurd. If I didn't know that that's what you were doing, that would be nuts.
Yeah, it was a fun job every day. I never knew what I was going to get into. And it was always a different group of people.
You know, realistically, Survivor has been on and off part of your life for, I guess at this point, over 15 years. How do you...
20.
I mean, 20 years.
Crazy.
How has it impacted your personal life, aside from getting recognized while you're at work, but how has it impacted your personal life? And also, like, how do you deal with the fact that you decided to get on this ride 20 years ago and you're a little bit still on it?
You know, there's good and bad about it, because I was an actress before I went on Survivor, and that's still my favorite job when I randomly get those.
Yeah, you were Jerry, the actress from LA, when we were introduced to you. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I was just like struggling like everyone else at the time, and I'd gotten some pretty decent roles at that point. But in a lot of ways, Survivor actually knocked me off the path that I was on as an actress. But it gave me so many crazy opportunities. Like, I was flying to New York, I don't know, a couple times a month. It was so different back then. They treated us to first class everything. Like, I got picked up in limos. I was doing all the talk shows. I was on Letterman, Craig Kilborn, like all these opportunities that I thought would help launch my acting career, and just didn't. And a lot of that was because people didn't understand reality TV yet. And they literally believed what they saw on that show in season two. And there were people in LA who were just like, I will never work with Jerry Manthe. She is a bitch.
You're so right. And it's so interesting you bring up going on the talk shows. I was a huge Letterman fan and a huge like late night talk show fan in general. And at that time, I don't know when it stopped, but certainly season one and season two, the night after every cast off was sent home, that person would be on Letterman for like, you'd be on for like 5 minutes. And also, okay, were you on the Rosie O'Donnell show?
I was, and she hated me.
Wait, tell me about this experience. Please don't leave anything out. This I want to hear about.
Well, I do want to touch on Letterman, because honestly, it was my dream to be on David Letterman's show since I was in college. And I remember sitting with my sorority at the time going, someday I'm going to be on David Letterman's show. And everybody was like, oh, shut up, Jerry. And when I got there, I was really disappointed, because the producers, I remember, came down in the green room and they were like, look, here's what we're going to talk about. Don't try to be funnier than Dave. Don't go off topic. Don't add anything to the conversation. He's going to ask you questions. Here's the questions. And I'm like, oh, this is not what I expected. And then he wouldn't let us sit in the chair. And so one of my regrets, honestly, is that I didn't go off script and tell him how much I was excited to be there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he ended up really liking me. He was like, oh, this Jerry person, she's really nice, you know. But I wanted to get in that chair so bad.
I'm trying to remember. They had you, where were you physically? I'm remembering, like, the Survivor people were you, like, off site? Like, where were you guys?
The back door. The stage, like, he's on stage, and there was a door that you would go backstage through, and he made us stand like almost in the dark back there. Like, he was so mad that he was required to have us on his show. And I was so upset by that, because I my whole life I dreamed of being on his show, and I kept thinking, I'm going to come back here someday.
It never occurred to me that he was required, but of course they were both on CBS.
Yeah. He was very bitter about it. You know, that's kind of his thing, though. You know, he makes his own rules, and I still love him to death. And I would, oh man, if I could get on his show now.
And what about Rosie?
So Rosie hated me. She was on her show like every night or every day, because it was daytime, just bitching and moaning about how much she hated me. And right before I was on her show, she threw a big launch party for her magazine in New York, and I got invited to the launch party. Oh, and so I was there.
Fucking iconic. That's amazing.
Yeah. Back then we got invited to everything, like every red carpet event. The paparazzi used to know my name. They'd scream at me. Like, it was so much fun. But I saw Rosie at this party, and I went up to her and I was like, hey. And she was, you know, fairly nice to me at that point. But yeah, I went on her show, and she was just like really brutal with me. And she loved Colby. Oh, she gave him a Harley Davidson. Like, it was a big deal. She was all about Colby. And if you go back and watch the show now, like a lot of people, the younger generation that's just now watching season two, they're like, I don't understand. Like, why was Jerry villainized? She didn't even do anything. In fact, Colby was kind of an asshole to her. So I think over the years, people have come to realize that I didn't do anything to be villainized, but it also made me memorable. So again, double-edged sword all the way down.
Well, you tell me why you think you were villainized, but I think it's because so much of your storyline focused on the love story between you and Colby, yet they were only showing it from your perspective.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Like the conversations Colby and I had that no one ever got to see. Like, obviously, he was flirting with me, or I wouldn't have just kept throwing myself out there like that. Like, come on.
Right.
I have my issues with Colby. We've moved on from it to some degree. But, you know, if you go back and watch season, if I can't watch it, like I'll get PTSD.
I mean, I'm assuming you guys never like hooked up or dated in real life. Okay.
It took a very long time for us to get to that point. It was after Heroes and Villains, like when we were in New York, we went to a strip club together. And we had a lot of fun together that particular evening. It was kind of our water under the bridge moment. But up until that point, no, like he's very anti-survivor anything. Like he won't go to any reality events. Like he's tried really hard to distance himself from that. And personally, I think it's because he has to live with the fact that he chose to go to the end with Tina instead mm-hmm. of Keith, because if he had gone with Keith in season two, he would have won. And so he has to live with that. And I think that still haunts him to this day.
In so that wait, situation. Jerry, back to the two of you at the strip club in New York. So you're saying it was like 15 years of like sexual tension that like, it's like you finally hooked up with your high school like crush.
Yeah, we had a really good time that night. He bought me a lap dance.
That's amazing.
We laughed, we joked, we went out to dinner. It was a lot of fun. And then the next night, I think there was some other event we were all at, and he took off with Parvati. So, you know, he's one of those guys, like, you know, enjoy the moment while it's there, because it's probably not going to be there the next day. It was one night, that's it. And then it was one and done.
Are you in touch with him now?
No, like I said, he has completely disappeared off the Survivor radar, and I think he's actually married now, and I heard he's hosting some adventure show or something in Alaska.
Oh wow. All right, let's go all the way back. You know, how did you apply initially for the show? Like, did you hear like an ad for it on the radio? Like, did you watch season one?
I actually applied for season one. So at that time I was in LA, I was bartending at this really cool club in Santa Monica called the Circle Bar. Mm-hmm. And I was on my way to work, and I was literally like at the point where I'm like, I'm about ready to wring some necks of some drunks. I was over it. I'd been bartending for like 12 years in LA, and I was just like done. And on the way to work, I heard this ad. Like 16 people on an island, last one left gets $1 million. I'm like, oh, I could easily win that. And why? Nobody knew what it was yet. Because as far as like battling the elements of nature and being outdoor, I'm a very outdoorsy person. And I'd been going to Burning Man already for several years. And I was very familiar with very harsh environments and how to build a shelter and all that stuff. And I just knew that if I could get on it, I would win. But nobody knew the social aspect or how it worked yet. It was literally like this idea CBS was throwing out to save Les Moonves' job, because he's about ready to lose his job.
Oh my God.
And he took a chance on Survivor, and it turned out to be this crazy phenomenon. So I did not get picked for season one. And because of that, in typical actress fashion, I was like, screw your stupid show. I'm not even going to watch that, dumbasses. And then I remember how big it got, and I watched the last episode, like the final tribal council. And I was like, wow, this is nuts. And so as soon as I heard season two was getting cast, in fact, I didn't even send in anything. They reached out to me.
They remember so, you.
Yeah. And it turned out there was a girl, I'd written a play in 1998 and produced it, directed it. And cast it, the whole thing. And there was a girl that I cast in that play who is now on the casting staff for Survivor 2.
Oh, wow.
And then one of the other women who was Lynn Spillman, who had cast me previously on a dating show on MTV.
Blind Date.
No, that was one I did later. But this was called Singled Out on MTV.
Jenny McCarthy's show.
Yes, yes, exactly.
You were on Singled Out?
I was, yeah. I was in the chair. I got to pick the guy. And MTV actually ended up offering me some work after that. Like, they loved me. Like, it was a whole nother story. But so these people I knew were casting Survivor. And Lynn called me and she was like, oh, my God, Jerry, that tape you sent us for season one sucked so bad. She's like, I fought for you so hard. I know you. You're great for this show. Just get me another damn tape. I give you 2 weeks to get it to me. And I was like, oh, my God. And so I borrowed a friend's video camera. I like had him video me climbing rocks and like hiking and followed me to the Circle Bar where I was bartending and I was breaking bags of ice and shaking up martinis. And I learned how to do voiceovers on video. This is before any kind of software was out there that made it easy to do this. Like, I had so many friends I had to ask for favors and I put together this kick-ass tape and literally got it there within minutes of the post office closing because I had to mail it in a VHS form.
Well, yeah. The brilliant thing because I remember season one aired over the summer and it was maybe like halfway through that people started to catch on, kind of like in an American Idol type way. It's like people don't catch on like first episode. It takes the momentum of a show, like, really helps it.
Yeah.
And that finale, I don't know quite how many people watched it, but I think with Richard Hatch's win, I don't know what the right word is, like, galvanized, like, at least in America, everybody was glued in the same way they were to watching Kelly Clarkson win that first American Idol.
Yeah, it was a TV phenomenon, and reality TV didn't really exist yet, except for The Real World on MTV, which I was totally addicted to as well.
I want to talk to you about that too, yeah.
Yeah, I loved The Real World, but there was nothing else like it on TV. So at first people, I think, especially people in the industry, they were like, oh, reality TV, like, screw that. It's bullshit. Nobody's getting paid. There's no story lines there. You know, it was, people in LA were very anti-reality, and which is also, I think, what kind of hurt me from doing it in season two with my acting career.
Yeah.
There was just such a negative vibe towards reality TV, but season two, they were so brilliant. I mean, our first episode was right after the Super Bowl.
Absolutely brilliant.
We still have the highest rated views. 36 million people watched season two. And we beat Friends in their final season in the ratings. And I can tell you later, I bumped into the cast of Friends at the People's Choice Awards and they were not nice. They hated us so bad. I
was
like,
so funny.
Come on, you guys, like, give us some props for God's sakes. Like, and I loved Courtney Cox. I always felt like I should have had her career.
I mean, you kind of look like Courtney Cox. Like, you have a Courtney Cox-ish vibe.
Yeah, and especially when in the 80s when I had the bi-level feathered hair with like the party in the back, you know, total mullet going on. And when she got pulled up on stage at that Bruce Springsteen concert,
yeah,
I looked exactly like her back then. Yeah.
Was your season the most applied for season? Like, didn't like 50 million people apply for the Outback?
Yeah, it was something really insane. That's why I felt so lucky I had some inside people who were fighting for me, which really helped. But it was also a show that was kind of made for someone like me, and I just embraced it, you know. And it, I guess the part about the whole experience that makes me a little sad is that my experience that I had in the Outback is so different than what you saw on the show. Like, I was definitely a leader in a lot of ways, because most of those people don't even go camping, you know. Mm-hmm. And Kel did have beef jerky. I still to this day have to tell that silly story and explain that, yes, he did. And he is still talking about it. Of course, it's the only way anyone would remember him anyway.
I mean, hiding food was like the cardinal sin.
Oh, well, if you're going to do that, at least share. Like, be smart about it. He was,
Going back to the reputation, you know, like the Black Widow, or like the real, like the villainess, which I love that word, by the way.
Villainess?
I love that word.
Yeah. Black Widow, I still don't know where that came from. I still can't figure that out. I feel like that was given to me on the All-Stars, and it had originally been given to Parvati because she ate the men in her season. Like, I don't feel like there was any moment in Australia where I was ever called that, but Jeff wanted to deem me the original Black Widow. And I was like, yeah, all right, I guess I'll take it. I think since I moved up here to Napa, I've had a very quiet, quiet, reflective time. There was a period where I would wake up in the middle of the night and go, like, why did I do that? Like, there was at some point, what was it? The Today Show that we were on every morning, I think. They asked me to be the person who interviewed people as they got voted off on the Today Show. And what an opportunity that would have been. You know, I could have ended up on the Today Show for all the future survivors that got voted off. But I had PTSD so bad, and I didn't want to talk to any of those people because they had said so many horrible things about me. And I was just like, I had turned down the job. You know, I regret that. Wow. Yeah, there's been some moments, some missed opportunities, just because I was seriously affected by the amount of hate that I felt from people. Like, it was crazy. I was in LA for, at that point, I'd been there 5 years, busting my ass as an actress, going to all of the auditions and driving and doing all the stuff. And I remember my cousins came to visit me once, and we were driving down the road, and I stopped. I was looking down the street, looking at traffic, waiting to pull out. And I pull out into traffic, and this guy in this Porsche comes flying up on my ass, and he gets next to me, and he's like, you know, roll your window down, which is funny to even do this, but he's like, roll your window down. And I'm like, roll it down. He's like, that's why everybody thinks you're a fucking bitch. And I'm just like, oh my God, I'm getting recognized in my car and being called names. Like, oh, what's that? And my cousins were like, oh my God, you know, they were freaking out. Like, they were afraid for me, but also they thought it was kind of cool that people recognized me. But I was like, oh my gosh, this is what my life has turned into.
So how did you deal with that? Like, did you go to therapy? Like, how did you?
I should have gone to therapy. It's, you know, it's not too late.
It's not too late.
I never went to therapy. I just kind of figured out how to deal with it the best I could. And, you know, the opportunities that came after I got through my PTSD a little bit, I feel like I still have some, but I don't know. I just kept pushing forward. I've never been the kind of person, and I don't think back then either, therapy was as cool as it is now. But yeah, there was a lot of residual stuff from that. And, you know, I tell people the story, like, Survivor airs on the East Coast at 6 o'clock Pacific time. And so people on the East Coast would see the episode, and there would be this wave of hate just coming across the United States in my direction. And I would, every week, I would go to the grocery store, I would get at least 2 bottles of wine, and I would look over, and, you know, there was really no internet at the time either. Which,
Jerry, I was literally just going to say, you must feel a huge sigh of relief that at least there was no social media. There was no Twitter.
Yeah, no,
that would have been really bad.
That would have been horrifying. No, instead, there were tabloids. And so I'd be at the grocery store getting the wine, and I'd look over, and like, my face is on every single tabloid on this shelf, and I would just start grabbing them, put them with my wine. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna face this the best way I can. I'd go to my friend's house, we'd sit down, start drinking, and I would read all the tabloid stuff. And there were like ex-boyfriends coming out of the woodwork telling stories about me and Some of them were partially true, but it's a whole nother thing. I was like, well, at least he got that right. Okay. And I mean, I got blamed for breaking up Jeff Probst's marriage. Like, there was just like craziness happening. So this wave of hate. And then I would watch the episode and I would just sit there and go, oh, what are they doing to me? It was episode 2 that really defined where they were going with all the footage and my character. Like, episode 2, that was the beef jerky and the Keith can't make rice, like all in one episode. And it just went downhill from there.
You know, on the show, you say that you had never met a more likable person than Elizabeth Hasselbeck, and you voted her off because you saw her as a threat. Do you still stand by that? And
no.
Okay.
I don't even remember. Did I say that?
Yeah, I wrote it down. I mean, I rewatched your whole series.
Well, you know, she was very sweet and likable, and her and Kentucky Joe had that really cute little thing going on. And I had no idea what she was saying behind my back, obviously, but she was kind of a wuss. I mean, she was always whining, like, my hair's falling out, you know? And I was just like, suck it up, chick. Like, well, this is not a spa day here. I know that I might get some hate mail for this, but I will say the fact that she was on The View to me was really frustrating, because she never left her parents' house. She never lived on her own. She never had to pay any of her own bills until she got married. And then she, you know, went off with him. And so nobody who's not been in the world struggling to survive and pay their own bills and make their own way, make things happen on their own, there's no point of view that they could possibly have that I'm going to respect. And so that was my biggest thing with her. And she was just regurgitating clearly what her parents had taught her. And yeah, I tried to get on that show, but they were just like, no.
You tried to audition for The View?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there were just too many other people who were like-minded. They needed someone on the opposite spectrum. And boy, did they find it in her. Like, I couldn't watch that show. It was painful.
Like being out there with her, is it now, or at least, what, you know, when she was at the height of her fame as a co-host on The View, was it just wild to hear her political views?
Well, we never talked politics on Survivor or religion or any of that very polarizing stuff. And it wasn't really the hot topic that it is now by any means. But I was not surprised at what she was saying or representing. And like I said, she was regurgitating what she was told by her parents. And quite honestly, I never watched The View because it was just too painful. And it was another one of those.
What I'm seeing right now, because we were just talking about Rosie O'Donnell, that infamous like split screen when Rosie quit.
God, yeah, I forgot all about that. Oh yeah, Rosie like went after her. I was like, go Rosie, go.
I think that was the first time The View used a split screen, and that really pissed Rosie off, and that was why she walked off, because she had big issues with the EP at that time of the show, and she thought he was trying to turn it into a circus, which he was,
of course. But, yeah, and it worked.
Your experience on Survivor, did it give you any coping mechanisms that you were able to apply during the pandemic? Really, I'm thinking when it was really bad in the early days of quarantine, just dealing with the isolation and all of that. Was that something you were thinking about at all?
Wow, that's quite a question. I ended up getting this job as a private chef right when the quarantine hit. Survivor, I think, definitely taught me a lot of skills that I've used in my life. I mean, I learned what I'm capable of. I can deal with some pretty stressful, horrible situations. Every time someone says, I'm starving, I'm like, shut up. I'm like, no, you're not. I was like, right now you can walk to your fridge and you can go make yourself something. Starving is when your insides are eating itself and you have nowhere to go for relief. And I swear to this day, every night I lay down in my bed, I bought myself the nicest, most expensive Tempur-Pedic. And Not a night goes by that I don't lay down in that bed and think to myself, oh my gosh, I'm so grateful I have this bed. There's just things I will never take for granted ever because of Survivor. Just comfort. Like I explain to people that being on Survivor is like being tortured, like Chinese water torture every single day of your entire existence, 24 hours a day. It is so awful and so uncomfortable. And there is nowhere to go for comfort. There's, you're always cold and you're wet and you're tired and you're hungry. And there's people constantly like, you know, talking about you every time you walk away. There's like the level of paranoia is so extreme. And, you know, I was very lucky that I got to play season two. There were no idols. There was no like twists and turns. It was just straight up survival and figuring out how to make that work.
Yeah. I wanted to talk to you about the evolution of Survivor as a game. I mean, it's a TV show, but it's being posed as a game. Talk about the evolution, just the different, I mean, you're talking about the idols, but also like the different strategies that have evolved over time. You know, I guess like day one, the real strategy was Richard Hatch's of forming an alliance.
Yeah. That was my strategy 100% going in. But then when I played season 20, I found out that there were already existing alliances before people got out there. And my strategy has always just been adapt, constantly change, adapt. Don't think that there's one set way to get to the end. There, every minute things are changing so drastically. And then with all the idols and like, yeah, people, there's some, season 40 blew my mind. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I could not believe the level of gameplay going on. Like,
what do you think are like the top three strategies?
Oh gosh. The number one strategy is adapting. I mean, you have to constantly, you know, figure out which scenarios are going to work best in your favor. And that changes so much that itself is so exhausting. And then, of course, find at least one person that you can almost completely trust as much as you can trust them in Survivor. That's also very hard. And I guess now the other strategy is always look for an idol. Mm-hmm. I hate that because it takes people away from camp. And that's where all the relationship stuff is missing now. And the things that I think made us all friends in the end, all of that is really truly missing because people are just constantly scheming and planning, and you know, it's exhausting to watch. And I know that we don't even get to see, you know, a quarter of what's going on. Like, how many times have you watched an episode now where you're like, wait, was there a conversation that happened that I didn't hear? Right. Like, how did they end up voting that way? And I absolutely hate 100,000%. I hate all this talking at tribal council. That was not allowed. That was never allowed. You went in there, you had to be quiet and you had to let Jeff do his thing. And, you know, if you made eye contact with somebody, you know, that was it. Like now they're like getting up and walking around and like whispering in each other's ears. I'm like, no, I hate that.
The elimination process. I mean, spoiler alert, you were eliminated 3 times. But
that last time was so cool.
When you film that, I mean, it's not, they're all confessionals that you're doing, but like the one where the elimination confessional, are you just happy that you're going home or are you like upset? Like, what is your emotional state?
Disappointment, anger, resentment, all the bad stuff. Like you feel all of that. You feel betrayed. Even if it wasn't a complete surprise, it's still so disappointing to be taken out of the game every time. Like especially that last time, I was already spending my $1 million.
Oh, yeah. So, okay, let's talk about the stakes here. The $1 million. Were you going to buy a house?
I was going to make a movie. I was like, I'm going to produce something. I'm going to create my own work as an actress. And that was like my big thing. The last time I played, I was actually, was when the real estate market tanked and my house was upside down by like $300,000. And I was just like, I really needed the money more than I ever did before just to survive in my life.
Yeah.
So the disappointment was different, but it was actually, I think, harder once it all hit me what happened, because I was so close. And I know that if I'd made it to the final three, I would have won against any mm-hmm. any combination, that I would have won, because that jury was so pissed at Russell. They hated Parvati, and no one respected Sandra because she kept quitting every time we had a challenge.
Right.
So, but when I got over to the other side and the jury was just like, rah, like telling me how they felt, it just hit me all of a sudden, like, oh my God, if I had just gotten through this last tribal council, I would have won.
Would you do it again?
I, you know, people ask me that all the time, and I've been like, yeah, sure, I'd do it again. But I think now I'd have to think about it a little bit, because it hurts. You know, it's just, like I said, it's uncomfortable. And yeah, what am I saying? Yeah, I'd probably do it again. It's like giving birth, apparently, which I've never done either, and I won't ever
you
do that.
They say you forget it.
Yeah, like you go through all this pain, and then you forget about it, and then you go back and do it again, and you're like, what have I done? Like, that's what I did the two times I played after the first time. I was like, oh my God, I forgot how much this sucks.
You just mentioned a bunch of people. Who from over the seasons are you close with? Like, who are your friends? Are there little, like, Survivor cliques?
Yeah, and it's definitely changed, because, you know, there is this looming legend season everybody's talking about. So I'm always very aware that everyone's kind of still playing the game. That's just the nature of the game. So I do question some people's motives in reaching out to me out of the blue, like, oh, Jerry, how are you doing? I'm like, oh, God, somebody must have gotten a call.
So what would what would the legends season be?
We don't know. It's been a rumor out there on the internet for a really long time. I guess they bring back memorable people.
How would that be different from All Stars?
I mean, it would be like the updated version, probably with a greater scope of people from all, there's now 40 seasons.
Yeah.
I think it would be a pretty epic season, but they'd have to up the final money for sure. I think it needs to be 5 million. You want to see some good gameplay, throw some $5 million out in front of everybody, that'd be out of control.
Between All Stars and Heroes versus Villains, it started your redemption arc.
Kind of. I mean, the reason why I did the All Stars was because I felt like I needed to redeem myself and, like, show people the softer, gentler side of Jerry. And I learned while out there that is not the time or the place to be the gentler, softer, more vulnerable person that I am. That is not the appropriate place, because, I mean, I almost quit. There was the worst storm we've ever seen to this day, the worst storm ever in Survivor history. I literally thought we were going to die that night. It was the camera guy ran away. There is no footage whatsoever of us huddled while lightning is striking, you know, feet away from us. My hair was like wet and like floating. There was electricity in the air. The whole beach got washed out into the ocean. It was the night that Rupert's horrible shelter got flooded.
I was gonna say, yeah, this is when you had to build, and he built a thing that was built to collapse.
It collapsed, yeah, because he dug a hole in the ground like 5 feet deep.
You were so pissed.
I was, yeah, literally like, is anyone else concerned? And no one else spoke up, and I went, okay, here I go. I'm just going to go along for this ride. And sure enough, that storm hit. And I was just like, this is not worth $1 million. Like, we are going to die tonight. Somebody is going to get seriously injured. And things were very different back then. Like, there was not a constant medical check-in. Like, now they check you into medical previous to every challenge, and then after every challenge, just to make sure you're doing okay, to check on you. Like, if you have some kind of infection, they give you antibiotics, they'll give you band-aids and ointments and stuff. Back then they were like,
shake it off.
Yeah, walk it off, Jerry. I was like, I literally had hypothermia. And I told the camera crew, I was like, you guys, I mean, everything, I was frozen. Like, I could not get warm, and I was shaking. I was crying. Like, people saw me cry for the first time. I was like, I have hypothermia. They're like, just go sit in the sun, you'll be fine. And I'm like, this was so ridiculous. But that season hurt in so many ways. And it fractured some really tight relationships to this day.
Like who were your close friends?
At the time, my closest pals weren't even on the All-Stars. Mitchell is still one of my favorites. But yeah, he wasn't out there. I felt very alone in that season because there were a lot of people who were very tight. And like, you know, Ethan and Jenna, both Jennas, had dated. Mm-hmm. So he had that background. And Tina still did not like me. Rupert was just freaking obnoxious. And I felt very alone. And I couldn't, that first tribe I was on, there was nobody that I could bond with. And so when we merged and I ended up with Lex, that's when I was like, oh my God, finally somebody I love to pieces. And we instantly, you know, bonded. And the fact that he had to vote me off or felt like he had to vote me off, we still talk about that. We're in touch a lot. He lives pretty close to me. I just love him to pieces. And I stay in touch with Ethan. Mm-hmm. Even though Ethan talked a lot of shit about me on the All-Stars, when I got booed at the finale and I walked off that stage, it was him and Jenna that came to my hotel room to make sure I was okay. But that season was, I don't think I'll ever be able to watch that one again. It was very painful. Jenna left because her mom was dying of cancer and she felt inside she had to get out of there. And thank God she did. She got there right. Got to spend one day with her mom before she passed away. Like, it was just very intense. And I tell people all the time, if you have to choose between going to hell or going to Panama, you should definitely choose hell.
Who do you think is the ultimate player of the game? Not necessarily who you like the best or you like the way they played the game. Like, who do you think is the ultimate objective player?
Oh my gosh, that's a lot of people to choose from.
There's so many lists online, and I'm just going to throw out a couple names, and you tell me like your feelings on these people and who maybe you would put ahead of these people: Boston Rob, Poverty, Sandra, Tony. These are names that come up a lot.
Yeah, I think Poverty is one of the best players. I've never seen anybody work people the way she works people. I saw right through it, you know, the sexy smiles and flirtations and all that stuff. But man, guys were just like falling over themselves. Like, I was always in awe of her. And that's why I wanted to get rid of her on the Heroes and Villains immediately. I was like, she's got to go. But then at the end, I'm like, I have to vote for her because, oh my God, I've been trying to get rid of her since day one and she's still here. I think she is a great player. She is someone to be afraid of when you're playing with her. Boston Rob, no, absolutely not. No.
Why?
He plays the same game every time. It's intimidation, manipulation, controlling. And it's finally, after all the seasons he's played, including one where he was literally set up to win, he was put into a game with all of the biggest Boston Rob fans in the universe. And they were all just so in awe of him. That's why he won that season. That whole season, I was doing a podcast at the time, picking apart all the gameplay. And I was just sickened. I was like, I don't even want to watch this, but I have to because I'm doing this show. And I think on the winter season, it was just very, for the first time, thrown out in the open how controlling he is. Like, when I played with him on Heroes and Villains, if anybody got up to go to the bathroom, like this happened to me one time, I got up to go to the bathroom and he's like, somebody needs to follow her. She might go look for an idol. I was like, do you see the shovel in my hand? I'm going to go take a crap. So I'm pretty sure none of you wants to follow me, but feel free if you would like, if you're into that kind of thing. But you know, you guys need to relax. Like, this is ridiculous. And so that last season he played, like, you got to see it. And the fact that he was playing with people who were really, really good at the game, who just let him think that he was in control and then voted him off. I was like, amen. I mean, I was so happy that finally he was outed for this one way of playing the game that's the only way he knows how to play.
You said in your confessional at the end of Heroes and Villains that going back for the third time was the best decision that you ever made because you felt like you had redeemed yourself. Do you still feel that way?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, of course, it would have been better if I won. But yeah, I feel like I got to play the game more relaxed and more like myself. Of course, I as a person changed, you know, over that many years. So it, that season for me watching it made me very proud of the way I played the game, of who I was as a person. I felt like I was a strong player. I definitely made some big moves. Again, I was always aware of what was going on and I found some cracks. I was never in anybody's alliance. Like that's, people don't realize that. Like Sandra, still to this day, I have to correct her because she's like, you were in alliance with Russell. And I was like, no, I wasn't. I was never in that alliance. They never asked me to be in that alliance. And Rob never asked me to be in his alliance. I was always right in the middle. And I liked it that way. Which way is going to work for me the best? And as soon as I saw Russell and Danielle get into that fight at that tribal council, I went, oh, there's the crack I was looking for.
Moving away for Survivor for a second, you mentioned earlier that you were a big fan of The Real World.
Yes.
Tell me everything. I mean, like, what were your like formative seasons?
Well, season one was epic. That will always be my favorite because it was groundbreaking and interesting and like, what? No idea what was going to happen with that whole franchise. And I don't know how many seasons that I actually watched, but I do remember Puck. So I ended up meeting Puck years later Park City, Utah, at some big, huge celebrity event. I think it was like at Sundance or something. And oh my gosh, we hung out that whole night. I swear.
What was he like?
Oh, he's so crazy and so funny. Like I laughed so hard. I think actually we did mushrooms together.
This guy is a lunatic.
He's so out there, but it's a fun kind of crazy, like, you know, where you just like the whole night, you just laugh and he doesn't do anything that's going to hurt anybody. It's just good, clean fun. God, that was so long ago.
Really, the two tent poles of reality, I guess, really are The Real World and then Survivor. But nowadays, like a lot of it is like docuseries, like in the vein of like The Housewives and all that. Do you watch Bravo or no? Are you only competition
based? Oh, no. I am so addicted to Below Deck.
Below Deck?
Literally. Below Deck, all the different Below Decks. There's the yacht, there's the sailing, there's the Mediterranean. I watch them all. I am just fascinated. It's also because I actually chefed on yachts for a couple of seasons many moons ago. And that is one of the hardest jobs in the universe, is to be a chef on a yacht, because you are literally on call 24 hours a day. And you're working in a tiny space. You've got to find food supplies in weird places on islands that have very little to nothing. You know, sometimes you're just floating in the middle of the ocean and you'll get someone who wants something specific that you're just like, I can't really get that for you right now. But you got to find some way to make them happy. It is a horrible, horrible, thankless job, honestly. So watching that show, let me just say, it is so spot on to exactly what that industry is like. It is crazy. It is filled with people who all sleep together and, you know, party like you're, I don't know. They party like the world is ending and it's like their last chance to get drunk. I love that show so much. And I have the biggest crush on Ben, the chef, Ben.
Okay.
I love him. And I just recently contacted Kate
Chastain.
Yes, I contacted her on Instagram. You should have her on your show. Oh my God. I sent her a DM. I was like, oh my gosh, Kate, like, I absolutely love you. And she sent me a message back. She's like, oh my God, Jerry, I watched you all the time. I was like, two reality TV bitches. I was like, we need to do something together. Can you imagine me and Kate doing something together.
I think she's free now. She was host. So she had left Below Deck, and then she was hosting like a Bravo like after show thing. But she left that like in recent weeks. So she may be free for you.
Oh my God! I've got to find something to do with Kate Chastain because I love her. Like she is kind of mean to people, but I also understand her because I've been there. Like when you're dealing with people who are lazy or, you know, not too smart, like especially in a tight environment like a yacht, like I totally get why she gets so short with people. I'm like, I just love that show so much. Yeah. I was watching The Housewives for Orange County at the beginning.
You only watched OC?
I watched a little bit of Jersey. I think I watched a couple seasons of that. And I definitely got hooked in Beverly Hills for at least the first three seasons, I think.
Yeah, well, those are the important ones.
And you know what's so funny? Like, after season two, there was a group of people that contacted me and said, we just want to follow you around and film your life now. And I was like, no, absolutely not. Again, PTSD. I was like, no way, no how. And of course, now I'm just like, son of a bitch, I could have had my own show. Like, what was I thinking?
So wait, a production company contacted you. They wanted to like film something that maybe could have gone.
At that time, my life was so off the charts. Like I was invited to every red carpet event in LA. I was hanging out with A-list celebrities. Like I said, I would go to events and the paparazzi would just go nuts. They'd be like, Jerry, over here, Jerry. I'm like, and I always said, oh my gosh, as long as the paparazzi knows my name, I'm big. And so I rode that wave, I think for 5 years. I had this amazing life filled with all this excitement and the entertainment business, which was my dream. Like that's why I moved to LA in 95, was for that scenario, except I imagined I would have all that fame from being an actress. I've been an actress since I was 9 years old. Like that's who I am. And I was frustrated that no one really got to see that. And they knew me because of a reality show. But I was just trying to take all of it in. And, you know, at the time I was like, no, I don't want a camera crew following me around in my house and everywhere. And like, I had PTSD. Mm-hmm. I am available now for anyone out there that wants to follow me around Napa Valley. And in fact, someone did contact me a couple years ago. They were thinking about doing, they were like pitching it. Like, it's not a Real Housewives, but it's like the women of Napa Valley.
Yeah, and that means it's Housewives.
I'm like, sign me up. And so I talked to them for months. I was like, that would be a really great show. I do understand why it would be hard to make happen because this place is very small. It's the smallest place I've ever lived in my whole life. I live in a town, population 300. Imagine that.
Oh, wow.
Napa County is about 100,000 people, and that's this entire valley. And people here know everybody, and they try to stay kind of private, and the people who have tons of money are very clicky. Like I don't know if it would work here just because people, I don't know if they'd want to like give up the juice.
Sounds like Housewives to me.
I'm all for it. I mean, I'm not a housewife, but
but neither are they on the show. Ever hear of Bethany Frankel?
I love Bethany. I did watch a couple seasons of that one too.
Good. But very good.
And you know, it's funny. I listened to a podcast of yours with, some reality TV addict. He said, oh yeah, I would love to see the next Housewives show somewhere like in wine country. And when I heard that, I was like, oh, me too.
Yes, that I know what you're talking about. Yes. Yes. I was talking to my friend B, who goes by the name Pet Shop Boy.
Pet Shop Boy, yeah.
Pet Shop Boy. And his argument was to do it in wine country. And I said to do it in San Francisco because then you would get all the tech money.
Yeah.
And then they can go on the weekends to the wine country. It's like doing it in New York and the Hamptons.
Yeah.
Boom. It problem like solved. That.
But I just, I think there's something there. And like I said, I'm available. I think it'd be fun. I would love to get involved in one of those franchises that goes on for a while and I can get a little bit closer to what I actually want to be doing.
I mean, so that actually begs the question, like, what do you, you know, so right now you're chefing. Like, what do you want to do with, I don't want to say be dramatic the rest of your life, but like what?
My creative outlet, is that what you're trying to get into?
Sure.
Yeah. Yes. So I am actually right now kind of polishing up a podcast idea that I have, and it's based around my personal experiences and my stories, which I seem to have a lot of them, even though sometimes I don't think of myself as this like extraordinary person with all these stories. I think we all have stories. I always tell people we're all fascinating humans. It's just, it takes a certain kind of person to have the bravery to be vulnerable with people and share. And that's what my podcast would be based around, is my personal stories. And then also people who have similar stories, bring them into the fold as well. It's what I love about podcasts, is storytelling and people sharing these experiences where maybe they felt very isolated when it happened to them. And then once they share it, they start to understand that there's so many people that have experienced something similar. And then we all kind of feel a little closer. And I think right that. Now, that's what we need more than ever. So I'm going to call it Hit the Ground Running with Jerry Manthe. In order to thrive, not just survive, you have to hit the ground running. That's kind of how I've lived my whole life. Like, I've moved around constantly, and no matter where I go, as soon as I get there, I hit the ground running. Like, that's how I adapt. It's kind of the way I played Survivor 3 times as well. I have like a whole list of really hot topics that I want to touch on. And I have already talked to my friends in the Valley about bringing them onto the show to share their experiences. And everybody's so ready.
What are some of the hot topics that you want to create episodes around?
I just turned 50. And this is, for me, it was a pretty monumental point in my life. I will say this, it's not what you think it is. It's not this, I don't feel old. I don't feel like I look old. And I had
You look the same as you did on the Australian Outback.
Get the fuck out of here.
You do. You have the same face.
Well, I would hope so. It's mine. And let me just say, I'm very into good lighting. But thank you. That's very kind. I have good genes. My parents, I'm very blessed in my family arena. But turning 50 has been like a really big deal to me in a very positive way, because I don't feel like I thought I was going to feel at this age. And a lot of my friends just turned 50 this last year. It's been really interesting because I'm still single. So there is definitely a lot of relationship issues that I want to touch on, and maybe some topics concerning sex and trauma and things that, you know, people might need to talk about and not feel so alone. Yeah, there's just a wealth of things to talk about that I think will bring us all closer together.
I love it. I mean, I'm definitely going to be listening for sure. When we connected, like, I had no idea that you were developing a podcast. I just want to talk, you know, get to know you. And I think it's badass. I think it's awesome. Final question would be, what have you learned about yourself doing reality TV?
I mean, honestly, I think I've just learned that I'm capable of far more than I've given myself credit for. And I'm a very confident person. I believe if you want something, go get it. And that's what I've done my whole life, and it worked for me. But I think being on Survivor taught me how to endure some really horrific, uncomfortable situations and still keep pushing forward. You know, I talk to people all the time. They're like, oh, I could never do Survivor. It's just too hard. And I'm like, you know what? When you get in that situation, you would be surprised what you're capable of and how you find this rhythm almost. Like, when you first get there, it's so jarring. And the first 3 days are the worst. They are the absolute worst. In fact, the first 6 days are the worst. But then you find this pattern. And I think you can apply that to life as well. Like, anytime you feel overwhelmed and it just seems like everything's coming crashing down on you, if you just get through and just keep persevering, you will find some pattern of behavior that helps you cope with whatever it is that's happening. I think that's probably the biggest takeaway from that, is just no matter how hard you think something might be, if you just push your way through it, You can do it.
It's kind of like how they say everything is figure outable, which is
never heard that before.
Yeah. Oh, everything is figure outable is like, it's a big like entrepreneurial like mindset thing.
I like it. And I totally, buy into that whole perspective 100%.
I love you. You're great. Where can everyone find you? If people want to message you and talk to you, say hi, where can everyone find you online?
I'd have to say Instagram is probably the best place. I go on there. It's just at Jerry Manthe of me. I hate social media and I hate cell phones and I hate the internet. I was a person who lived before all that stuff. And I'm so grateful I experienced life without a cell phone. Like, we didn't walk around going, remember when we used to walk down the street and like greet each other? And now you're going to mask on.
And somehow we all found each other when we made plans.
Somehow
we all found each other and nobody needed to reschedule and cancel at the last minute. Everyone just stuck to the plan. And that's what I appreciate about the old days. All right, guys.
Back in the day.
Guys, go follow Jerry. Listen to her podcast when it launches. You guys can follow me, JessXNYC. Follow the show account, Hot Takes Deep Dives. And Jerry and I will see you soon. Thanks,
Yay,
guys.
Yay. Thank you so much.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.